Okay, so 1992, the most popular song in Freetown, Sierra Leone, was a song by a band called Inner Circle. They were a band originally from Kingston, Jamaica, and this song was called Sweat. They had another name for it also, which was A La 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 Long. Now, I probably can't sing it because of copyright reasons, so I'm just going to tell the story and read the lyrics. Now, all of us kids sang this song back then, and the lyrics go, "Girl, I'm going to make you sweat, sweat till you can't sweat no more. And if you cry, I'm going to push it some more, or." Yes, we sang this song as kids. You are listening to This Immigrant Life with Jonima Diaby. So my guest today I met because we studied together. The first thing that comes to mind when I think of her is brave. A go-getter, someone who takes risks in her work. I've seen it plenty of times. Very honest, very straightforward, very direct. Someone who you want on your corner and on your side. Here's my conversation with Treshana Clark.
I was born in Kingston, Jamaica.
And okay, and what was life like growing up in Kingston?
Oh God, it was just nothing but happiness, honestly. I was just talking to a friend of mine about, you know, just childhood on a whole. Growing up in the islands is so different than growing up in America. And I'm seeing that just because of my nieces growing up here. Me being born and raised there, it was such a sense of freedom that we felt as kids. And it's funny because, you know, others would look at us and say, okay, well, she's from a third world country. Oh, she lacked so much. Oh, she was poor. Or she, yeah, all of that may have been true. But in the state of a kid, you never felt that. You know, I was able to be barefoot outside running around on the asphalt. I would feel all of that. If it rained, we embraced the rain. We were just outside jumping from roof to roof. I'm not going to lie. I was one of those kids who used to egg people's house. But, you know, I was hanging with the boys in the neighborhood. We just have a lot of fun. And yeah. I think like that's what here in America, I have not seen and I've yet to see a neighborhood where the kids just come outside, you know, and just have that type of togetherness as like kids just really being kids. I don't see that here. And I've been trying to hunt that down for my son in particular.
Yeah.
So it really is kind of tough because a lot
specifically in California, I imagine it's a lot different, right?
Oh yeah, a lot different. You know, that's why now I moved to the Valley because now I'm thinking in the Valley area, at least we could find a little bit more of some family, you know, like some neighborhoods are a little more family oriented. And when I say that, it's really just a matter of maybe the neighbor next door has a kid or two and you see them outside and you kind of just say hi and then that's the end of that.
What was your earliest memory? The first memory that you remember thinking of you experiencing Kingston?
Well, definitely just the camaraderie with me and my friends, you know, growing up in the neighborhood and just feeling that sense of belonging that I don't feel here in America. But I would say also, first, something that always sticks in my head with my dad in particular is when I made the Jamaican track team, just to see how proud he was. And I'll never forget because oftentimes my dad could not come to a lot of my track events. Normally it would be my mother. My mother would always be at damn near everything. She would find a way. But my dad, I remember in particular this one time, she couldn't be there. I had just won, like we call it girls champs, girls and boys champs. That's like the big championship equivalent out here, like states. And I had just won, no, it's equivalent to like the whole NCAA championship. And I had just won it at the time. And so because of that, I qualified to now go and try out for the Jamaica team. So mom was not able to be there, but my dad was able to be there. So I felt an extra level of pressure. But I remember when I crossed the line, just to see the look on his face and then being told and looking up and realizing on the board that the numbers that I did add up and it placed me in the top two to now be able to go and travel with the Jamaican team, you know, to actually compete for my country, by far the best and biggest moment of my entire life. That will always be one of my proudest moments. See my daddy's face.
When were you athletic as a kid? Like, when did track or the thought of even doing sports in general, when did you realize you could do it at that level, like that you were really good at it?
I think, you know, in Jamaica, it's just a part of, like, every kid is almost just pushed into sport. It's like, it's not something that you're like, oh, she's good at and she can do it. No, you're automatically kind of just, we just start in that. Every school has like PE day, physical education day, and that set aside, sports day set aside, everything. Not like here, where I noticed some schools don't even have that anymore. Some schools are taking that out. But I would say, I think they realized from maybe about sixth grade, because sixth grade for us is still prep school. That's called preparatory school. I don't know what that is. But
elementary. Well, that would be the end of elementary here.
Okay. Wow.
I think. Right. Yeah.
And so it was like from sixth grade, he was like, okay, Trishana is excelling a little bit faster in different areas.
And were you just physically better than other kids? I don't mean to say it like that, physically better, but was it, you know what I mean? Like, was it something where it just looked like you just were better at your field than other kids? Like, what gave that thought?
Well, I think also I had different, I think the level of maturity took place great precedence at the time, because I don't know, I think it did have into play, like, you know, my dad was very strict, still is very strict. He is a no-nonsense type, and he raised me as if he raised me if I was a boy. So, you know, I'm very aware, I'm very observant. So I kind of feel, if anything, maybe that maturity level was forced on that knob a little bit more, because I was a young girl in that time growing up in the neighborhood, and my parents not being around, it's kind of like you had to kind of gain a sense of independence, you know, at a little earlier age. I think that played a lot into now me and my mom and my dad drilling in my head, like, Trishana, you always have to go after what you want. You don't ever give up on something. If you see that the line, you know, my dad kind of teach me, if, and it sounds really bad, but if somebody stepped on your toes, you step on their toe back, and then maybe you give them a punch on top of it.
No nonsense, no nonsense, yeah.
So he was so it was really like, just the drive that I had at that age was like, I was unstoppable. It was like, it doesn't matter. Okay, fine. You might cross the line before me this time, but I bet it won't happen the next time.
Do you think that informs you as a parent now?
Oh yeah. Yeah.
Like your parenting style, do you think it's strict?
I don't with my son. I'm very flexible. I give him a lot of room to be himself, as long as it's not harming him or anybody else. Now, if he, you know, let's say if he says something a little out of pocket, or of course, that's when I'll curve it and I'll say, okay, well, this is not as effective as if you said this. So I go about it maybe a little different than I think both my parents went about things with me, but it's still a lot of the core values they instilled are definitely still there for me as a parent.
Gotcha. Growing up, what did you fantasize you wanted to do when you grew up?
Being an actress.
Really?
Always. That was always a number one thing, being an actress, and that I wanted to somehow figure out being a nurse.
Where did that come from? Like, both sides, where did that come from?
Yeah, so The nursing aspect of it came from my mom had to have a surgery at the time when I was young. And I'll never forget just how, you know, she was kind of really shoveled off. The doctors kind of just pushed her to the side, did the surgery, and that was it. And then she was just left in her room by herself and just me sitting by the bedside. And I remember, you know, she was crying. She was in a lot of pain. She had major surgery. And there was this one nurse that came in, and to this day, I don't know her name, but, you know, I could see her. And just the comfort that I saw that she gave my mom in just maybe all she really did was just stood there a little longer than others, engage with her, listened to her, paid attention. Like every day that she came in, did that, I saw the difference and the impact it had on my mother to then motivate her to get up to even do some physical therapy. So when I saw that, I said, you know, wow, I want to be able to do something like that to move and transition people's lives like that. So that was the nursing aspect of it that I found. And then I think that's where I even started realizing how important empathy is. Always from in school, I always enjoyed, I was a very direct kid. I would tell you stuff as it is. Probably wasn't so nice as well, because, you know, some kids wasn't as mature, so they probably weren't ready to hear the truth of things. But because of that, they were just like, okay, let's just put her in some drama classes, you know. But that started from four. Like, from you, we start school in Jamaica really early, from the age of like 3 and 4. Yeah. And so they just kind of put us in a whole bunch of sports, a whole bunch of, you know, extracurricular activities. And that looked like doing arts and craft, doing drama, doing different things. And my parents just kept me in it. And as I started getting older, about the age of 9, I started touring with my theater group. And I realized this is something I liked, because I realize and acknowledge that to others, I might be a little weird because I like to just express myself, you know, whether it be if I'm talking to you and I just start singing a line, you know, or it comes out differently. So it was like, okay, is Trishana acting out in class? Why is she behaving like this in class? Then it started to seem like, oh, she's being rude or she's being disrespectful. But that wasn't the case. That was just me being me at the time and just trying to express myself. So acting then became a source that I could take on and embody something else and apply all the things that made me in the midst of it. So then now I could formulate and make that character, the person who wanted to sing in class earlier, I could add it onto that character, you know? So yeah. It really, for me, is just a freeing experience. And I also am able to play that and be empathetic in that, which I have 100%, you know, just in life with people now. So,
do you remember what the first film or first motion picture was that you saw, or actor that you saw that influenced you?
It has always been Johnny Depp.
Really?
Yep.
Okay, talk to me.
Yeah. I'm trying to remember off the top, what was the first thing I saw him in? But in Jamaica, you know, we have select channels.
Same in Africa, I feel you.
It was like, whatever the hell came on the TV, that's
what I was watching. was it Cry Baby? Was it, no, was Cry Baby one of his? Yeah, Cry Baby was one of his movies. Yeah, Edward Scissorhands, 21 Jump Street.
I remember seeing him from Cry Baby, but I think for me it was Edward Scissorhands.
Okay.
That really made me sit back and was like, yo, this man is on another level. Like, in order, and I realized, like, yo, he can literally bend to play any character. And I loved that about him. And I was like, yo, I want to do that. I want to embody as many characters as I can and live to it so truthfully and bring that to have other people feel like this. Because it was literally like Edward Scissorhands was somebody.
What's funny about you saying this is I've seen you play a character when you use the nails and
Basically, I know you're a beast with it. I know. And so when you say this, I can see the influence upon you. How did track or competition in track, or preparation, how did that inform you, say, relating to acting wise?
Oh, big. One, the discipline. The discipline that you get just being an athlete and doing it from high school, you know, through college, then to be able to touch on that for your Jamaican team, like, that showed me, gave me a lot of discipline. It gave me a lot of strength. Yes, both physically, but the mental aspect of it, that taught me in such a way to really drive and be persistent and just persevere for what you want. Because, you know, it's really funny, because in track, you bust your behind for so long just to try to shave damn near half a second off, you know? And you hope that you do it on the day that it counts. And it's like it's like a hit or miss time. It's like, this is your day, this is the race. Hopefully all that preparation you did is to take off this half a second. So I would definitely say, like, and it's funny you ask that, because I noticed in any interview I've ever had, like for nursing in particular, they've always asked about if I was ever an athlete. And a lot of the times people ask that because they want to see, where is your level of discipline, your drive? Do you have it? Is it there? Are you going to fold in the times of emergency or the times of need? In fact, I was just saying to my friend yesterday that I need to get back to having that set schedule that I'm used to, because, you know, what we do on a day-to-day basis is very important for the results that you want. Your goals and what your end result you want it to look like. But in order to do that, now you have to track back and see what your day-to-day basis is.
What about motherhood? How do you think that's informed how you approach your career?
Well, one, it's now instead of me having to access what it's like to be a mother, now I off the top know what it is to be a mother. I think it gives me, all the other mothers out there, I think it gives us like one extra stripe advantage in a sense.
Yep.
Because in every movie or TV show, whatever it is that you're playing, normally you're opposite somebody. Normally it's like, oh, you're about to lose this person, you're about to lose somebody, they're about to die, they went missing, or it's always something of that sort. And I can relate that, of course, 100% to my son.
Do you remember when you first thought about moving to the States?
Well, funny enough, my mom started talking about it first. And I was like, yeah, no, I'm not going. I'm fine. I'm cool here in Jamaica, because all my friends was in Jamaica. I'm like, I'm not caring about going to the States, what I'm going to do in the States. But at the time, I remember my sister, she was just very adamant about going to the States. And that was in Miami. Her friends had moved. You know, she had one or two friends like still left in Jamaica. But the thing with her was she wanted to be in Florida. So mom went ahead and sent her, because mom's best friend was living in Florida at the time. So the best friend said, okay, yeah, you know, let her come and live with me. And my sister was very happy with that. Me, on the other hand, I was like, yeah, no, I don't want that. I want to stay here. I want to ride my little rollerblades with my friends. And mom kept bringing it up that she wanted to move. She wanted to move. We had applied for green card. She got it. We had it. And I remember after I competed for Jamaica, my mom got a call from a school in Florida. And this school, it was a high school, but it was a private high school. But this school was so good, both academically, but athletics-wise, St. Thomas Aquinas in Davie, Florida.
Shout out.
Was the powerhouse. Okay, of sports. So we got a call from the head coach at the time And he was like, I'd love to meet with you guys. I want to offer Trishana, you know, a ride to come here, a scholarship to come here. And my mom saw that as like gold. And I saw that as hell. And for me, it was the beginning of hell coming to America.
Really?
And, yeah. Cause I you know, I'm not the type of person, I'm not very social. Well, even to this day, I'm a little bit antisocial just because it more stems from a little shyness, really. And, you know, I'm a little more of an introvert.
You hide it well, but go ahead.
Thank you. And so I already knew like making friends was going to be really weird and awkward. And, you know, at the time, that's what you kind of think about. So, yeah, I did not like that. And then that's when that happened. And then the coach was like, Trishana is running, doing good at all these events. Like, we can use her on the team. We would love to have her here. And then my mom was just like, yep, let's ship you off. This could be the beginning of everything that I want.
That she wants or that you want?
That she wanted.
Okay.
Not me.
Okay.
I did not want to come. And my dad, he didn't want that. He didn't want me to come because he felt like, and which is the truth, like Jamaica's education is a lot better than, you know, America's education system. So, yeah, my dad was against that heavily.
What was the most difficult thing about that first year then when you moved here?
Oh, God, just the fact that when I came here, one, you could really count on your two hands the amount of dark-skinned people, the amount of, you know, Black people that was in the school. That was one. But still, I never saw anything wrong with it because in Jamaica, we don't see color. We don't see race. So, you know, that's something that I'm not even used to. So
Let me pause you real quick with that one. Explain that to me. When you say that, I just want to know the mindset or why you say you guys don't see color.
Well, in Jamaica, we are known as like a melting pot. You know, our motto is out of many one people. My mom, for instance, take her. She is, if you saw her, people would think she's white. And then some may think she's Hispanic. Now, she has not a drop of Black in her. She does not, you know. She is Syrian, Indian, Chinese, and Portuguese, you know. And then my dad, that's where he's Indian and Black. He liked to add the Indian in there, but I'm like, Dad, but okay. So, again, in Jamaica, you know, I had friends who looked 100% Chinese, but they're Jamaican. They're born there in Jamaica. So that was their nationality. The nationality is that they're Jamaican. Their ethnicity was that they were Chinese. They were Chinese and Black. Like, for instance, my mom, dad is full-blown Chinese. So, you know, it's really, so again, when you come there, you'll see people of many different colors, many different races. So we all kind of grow up just understanding, oh, okay, like this is how we all look. Like we have never, and I've never felt that, or any of my friends, we don't, like the whole racism talk is almost really non-existent. I never even knew of such until I came here to America and I started, you know, being out in society here and being in school. Then that's when I started understanding like there's issues here in America about that. Because in Jamaica, we're taught a lot of like, you know, we're still under the British colony. So we're taught a lot of their history, not this side of life history. So yeah, the most you will see that happens often in Jamaica is maybe somebody of a darker skin color, maybe likes to bleach their skin color, you know, kind of like Michael Jackson, how he kind of bleaches skin color, but you'll see that happen. And that's just the person's preference.
Yeah.
You know, but yeah, you don't see and feel all that other tension that here in America we now feel.
So how do you deal with that shock of that culture shock then of going from a society that seems to have it figured out to a society that is still wrestling with that and battling hard with it?
Well, that was a huge, huge culture shock for me. When I first, my first year was horrible. I think up to my second year, it was horrible. And I said that because one, that was also being introduced to me at the time. My accent was a lot thicker. So it was so bad to the point where one or two friends I was starting to have, I remember one good friend of mine, her name was Astrid, and she was Haitian. But she had an American accent. So once I was dropped in the school, it's like everybody had such a strong American accent. I couldn't understand them and they couldn't understand me. So because of that, people didn't even like try to talk to me on the phone, like after school. If you were trying to do extracurricular, you know, activity or fun or do something, you couldn't really invite Trish unless you saw her in person to try to figure it out what the heck Trish was saying. You know, it was really that bad. And then for me, it has gotten a lot less over time because I've been here a few years now. It has gotten less, but initially, like throughout high school, like my latter years of high school, I was just dealing with not seeing the color so much, but rather realizing the classes. And I say that like middle class and upper class. So initially it was that for me, because now I was dropped in a school with maybe about 85% Caucasians. And or more. And I'm just sitting there like, okay. And everybody who was there, literally their parents all had, you know, Corvettes, Benz, like it was every single thing. And kids, it was a thing at that school that if you were turning 16 to going on like 17, yeah, that was a thing where the parents would drive up and like have your car with the bow on the car so all your friends could see, type of deal. And I'll never forget, like the people was in my grade, like they were getting like, I'm talking fripping Hummers on like 22 inch rims with like red bows. And I was like, wow, that's so cool, you know? And then here go my mom and her hoopie. I was like, Mom, just pull over to the side.
Oh, no, that's horrible. But, you know,
so fast forward. Now, I think, unfortunately, it took me so long. I know it was something that kind of started playing. You know, it was starting to come up about, because I would hear now friends that I was having started talk about it. Started playing a huge role when I got to college. Accent was still thick. I was known as just the, like, even in high school, I was just known as the girl who, she runs track. She really good. She run track really good. And then she just go home. And she really good in her schoolwork. And she just go home, right? So now in college, I had, you know, now dabbled into having a boyfriend. And have a boyfriend. And he was Italian, French Canadian, and not black at all. And I wasn't thinking anything of it. I'm like, well, you like who you like, right?
Yeah.
But now when I did realize this thing was wrong, was I remember one time, there's a part in Florida called Ocala. There was a McDonald's that was far away, but like in the boondocks, like all about there just seemed like boondocks and forests. And it was like known that people would live on like 20 acres of land out there. And you would just see boars running by, and it was just crazy. So his parents kind of had some reservations when they saw me. So I noticed I was kind of sensing something a little different. And I was just like, oh, okay, this is a little different. They were still nice, but it was just, there was a lot of hesitation. And then I remember his mom saying to him, you know, you always seem to like these black girls. So when she said that, I was like, oh, I said, well, if it make you feel bad, I said, well, I'm mixed. Thinking I'm doing anything with that. Because again, in Jamaica, I know I'm from so many different, you know, things like based on what my mom is and my dad. So I'm mixed. But wait, I'm falling off. But track it back to the McDonald's, right? So we got to the McDonald's, and I kid you not, it was almost like, you know when you watch a movie and everything is like slow motion, and like hay is rolling on the road, and the hay is, it was like that moment in time, and everybody stopped what they were doing, and they turned around and looked, and they were just looking at me. And I was looking at them, and I was like, hi, you know, can I place my order? And it was really weird. And then I remember him just kind of putting his hand on me, and he's like, Trish, it's okay, just tell me what you want. And then I told him, and then, you know, okay, he placed the order, but they just kept staring, and it was staring to such an uncomfortable point that I was like, that I said to him, I was like, yo, what's wrong with these people? And then he says, well, you know, they haven't really seen anybody like you. So I said, what do you mean? And, you know, it's funny because people can think that, oh, she's being an idiot or she's being naive, but I'm really not. It's really, this is just something I'm just not used to and I don't know. And still to this day, a lot of stuff I may ask that I genuinely don't know. And it's, you know, not because we're trying to be an idiot or we're trying to be funny. We don't know. So I remember that's when he said, like, yeah, they don't see people like you. You know, you're considered, you're Black. And I said, oh. So that's when I started realizing, man, this is something for real out here. It really dropped in for me after I had my son. And I'm sorry that it took me so long to really realize the gravity of everything. And, you know, because in college, you don't have to choose to learn history. Now, you know, me being a nurse, of course, I chose all the science classes and every single thing.
Realizing the outside view of your son, do you plan on having a conversation at some point, or when you think about him growing up in the U.S., what things or what steps do you think you're going to take, or are you going to take steps towards informing him of what the outside may see him as? Or do you think it's best for him to not be able to see that?
That's a really, really good question. I've often battled with it quite much. But, you know, throughout the time with George Floyd, with all the protests and everything that was happening, I made it a duty of mine that he wasn't hearing the news. If I was watching it, he wasn't seeing things. But I'm not sure at what point, even to this day, if we're hearing a police siren or the police is coming, he will off the top already start saying, I don't like the police. I don't like the police. And he would start getting that. And I'm like, yo, I'm like, wait, where's this? I'm like, hold on. You know why we don't like the police? And he would say, I only like firefighters. Firefighters are good people. And the paramedics are good people. You know, he's just four. So that's when I was like, oh, that talk really, I may really have to say something. And it kind of puts me as a mom in a bind because, like, yeah, ideally police is supposed to be there to protect us. But unfortunately, I cannot say the police is always there to protect a Black man. But right now, as I see him, I see, like, when he's on the playground, he's not choosing kids off of color. And I like that. So I think I have decided, like, I'm going to continue having him, you know, see friends and everybody, that everybody is one and as a whole, because that's one thing, like, from Jamaica, again, that was just there for me. You had Asian friends, had light skin, which was, I guess, white colored friends, you know, dark skin friends. You had everybody that was there, Indian friends, and nobody was discriminated against. So it's very important for me to make sure that here in America, he does that, you know? And yes, then if somebody kind of backfires and, you know, says something or, you know, calls him the N-word, then that's when I think, which at the time, he won't even really be able to know, like, that's something negative, you know what I mean? Because now that I'm thinking, like, in college, people used to say that to me, but I would just be like, child, you know, it never hold no weight or it never had any impact on me because one, I'm not American. So if when I wasn't American, two, I was born and raised somewhere else. You know, I did not feel the weight of what Black Americans here felt with that word at the time. I didn't even know it. So it was like when somebody calling me that, they used to wonder like, how the hell is this girl not tripping up? Or is she not acting out of pocket? If anything, I'd most likely be cursing in my Jamaican, which they probably wouldn't even understand anyway. They're probably looking at me crazy. But, you know, I normally just be like, okay, walk it off.
You know something, Trish, something that you're mentioning, and I didn't realize you had this experience as well, because when I moved here, obviously moved from Africa, everyone around me is the same race, but it's almost like you weren't aware of the outside's perception of yourself. Mm-hmm. And I think I remember in the US when I became aware of what someone else might think of me walking down the street or me in a grocery store. And it's a weight you shouldn't have to bear, but unfortunately you do bear it. Do you remember when you had that view of, oh, this is what someone thinks a Black girl here is, or, you know, any of those kind of thoughts? Do you remember that?
Yeah. For me, it was everything, like I said, dropped in around that George Floyd protest. And that really was just so recent.
I remember
starting, I don't know. I was like, what is this I'm feeling? Like, is this an anxiety attack? What is this I'm having? Because I've never felt that way. I remember in the midst of all the protests happening and we were having curfews here in LA. Now I had to go walk my dog outside. So now I was like, oh God. Like normally I like to go outside, walk my dog in my sweats, you know, and my hoodie and be real chill. Now I was like, oh my God. Let me make them see that I'm okay. I'm not going to hurt them. Or, you know, I was like doing that foolishness. And then, so when I went outside and I would see somebody, a white man, or whether it was a white woman walking by, I would be like, all of a sudden I'm now aware of myself that I've never felt before. Cause now I'm like, am I holding the dog off at a good length from them for them to feel comfortable as they walk by me? And I was like, Trishana, what the hell is going on with you? This has never been something I've felt before. And then I remember the next day I went out there and walking the dog, I was like, man, nah, screw this. Like, this is my presence too. I'm the sidewalk. So I was going through so many different emotions. And here comes another, you know, Caucasian person walking by me. But I also noticed in that time frame that all of the protests was happening, a lot more white people was telling me hi. A lot more white people told me hi, or gave me a head nod, or gave me kind of a look of peace, or I know what you're going through at this time.
What did that make you feel?
It made me realize, like, you guys are aware of what is happening. It made me really realize, like, oh wow, so you kind of are to be held accountable for how things have been going on here. And it made me at the time feel a sense of kind of pity, like, oh, they were pitying me. And I didn't like that. I really didn't like that because it felt so pitiful.
Because you said they're aware of it, mm-hmm. Would you rather people speak up when things happen rather than, say, be quiet or assume that they don't see things that are happening?
Oh, no, definitely speak up. I would rather you speak up and when you see something happening, you know. But again, a lot of people don't have that strength. That takes mental strength. That takes strength from in your heart. To speak up for your beliefs. So a lot of people are, you know, scared of really dying for speaking up for their beliefs. So that is something that I think a lot of America, you know, needs to deal with.
Yeah, it's almost as if people realize when wrongs are happening or racism or mm-hmm. anything of that nature, mm-hmm. but say inside of them, they wouldn't condone it or they're not with it, but they won't speak up against it. I would go as far as to say the same thing seems to happen on social media as well, in which people will see something that's messed up, but won't say anything about it, but just kind of say inside, I don't support this, but outside, I won't speak up. I'm going to do some quick hit questions with you, if you don't mind. What is your favorite city or state in the U.S.?
My favorite city or state. I've never been there, but I always wanted to go to Oregon.
Oregon. Shoshana, you got the left field like curveballs. I love it. Why Oregon?
Well, okay. I really wanted to run track there, you know, be a duck. And I remember I was choosing at the time and just loved their facility and everything about them. But I didn't end up choosing there because I wanted to. Again, it was a thing with the parents staying closer to home. So I ended up just staying right there in freaking Florida. But yeah, so I guess I would say there because I've never been there.
Okay, so Oregon on that one. What's one thing that you personally find in the U.S. that you think doesn't exist in Jamaica?
Something I find in the U.S. that doesn't exist in Jamaica. Oh, God. Well, definitely the amount of opportunities that is here. The opportunities to grow, you know, to have a lot more finances, to have a little bit of, you know, to have a little bit of a better life on the material side of things.
What is one thing about Jamaica that you think every American could benefit by experiencing this about Jamaican culture?
Self-care.
Self-care.
The importance of self-care. Like, and also, I think the fact in Jamaica, we help each other a lot. You know, in Jamaica, like, one neighbor is always willing to help the other neighbor, no matter what. And you kind of like feel the weight of the other person. So you try and pull that person through. Here in America, it's like, yeah, there's a lot of opportunities, but every man for himself. It's like, how can I help you help me to get better? That's what it is here in America. And in Jamaica, we care a lot about, like, you know, we're able to, you know, take a moment for ourselves, whether it is to just go, I don't personally drink, but like, employees or friends would go have a red stripe beer on the beach and just relax for a little bit, or, you know, maybe you're chilling by the waterfalls or just doing something that is truly passionate and one with you as a person and a whole. That's very hard to find the time here to do in America.
Since it's so hard, then how do you combat it? Caring for other people or the whole neighborhood community kind of mindset, since you've been thrown in a culture that is very, especially in the coasts, California, New York, you can be much of an individual. How do you actively fight that?
Well, with the self-care, I'm pretty bad at that. So that I could say I fell in with you guys. The self-care I gotta work on. A lot of my friends actually tell me that on a daily basis because, you know, I'm just kind of go one nonstop. And especially now that I have a son, everything revolves around my son. My son is my number one light and my everything. So I'm always on the go with him. I have to be staying with his 4-year-old energy.
Yeah.
So that I have to work on, I'll say a little better. But as far as the other aspect of it, I'm combating that with one, just being a nurse. Being a nurse and the type of nursing I think I bring to the table, and I do, and I'm able to empathize with people on a different level. Like in my nursing, that's one thing I could say, I go above and beyond with my patients and their family members because I care about the sick so much. You know, any little that I can do to help to make you better. And I care a lot about geriatrics. Like the elderly community is very big for me and to me. That's one. Two, I often find if acquaintances or friends, or it could be just a neighbor here in my building, if anybody's having an issue. Now, this is kind of good and bad, you know, for the individual, but it kind of becomes my issue. And like I was saying, that's something that we are used to doing in Jamaica. It becomes your issue until you help the other person try to figure it out and you find a solution with them. So that I would say I've definitely still kept, and that I am still to this day 100%.
And you mentioned accent-wise before, and I've talked to several different immigrants, and have you gotten to the point now where it doesn't matter to you anymore how you sound? Or do you think you still kind of work to try and sound more American?
The only time, you know, for acting, of course, it was very important. When I first came here to Los Angeles, I did a whole bunch of accent reduction classes, and the management team that I had at the time, they did not want to send me out. They didn't send me off, I think, by almost a year, because they wanted to make sure I was able to rid the accent in the midst of auditions. And it was very important to not go into a casting director office and be sounding and talking like, "I am Trishana Clark and I'm here to play."
I love it.
To play Genesis on ABC TV. They would be like, "Hell no, you're not." You know? So yep. It was very important that I'm able to just bounce from an American accent to a Jamaican accent when I'm speaking to my family, to any other accent that a character demanded of me, which I do think, though, I must say, me being able to bounce from a Jamaican and American accent so easy really helped open me up for other accents. So, you know, it definitely made me understand placement of the tongue in the mouth, the shape of the mouth, that sort of thing. Yeah.
Okay. I'm going to ask you probably the most important question I've asked all night. Gregory Isaac or Bob Marley?
Oh, God. You can't do that.
You got to decide. You got to pick one.
Oh, God. Well, you know.
The cool ruler himself or Bob Marley?
Boy, I'm so sorry, Greg, but I have to go with my Bob.
I love it. So it's Bobby it is. Speaking of reggae. Because, you know, we all think Jamaicans listen to reggae all the time. It's a stereotype. What did you grow up listening to?
Really, reggae.
Reggae? Really? Yeah. So it's not a mix of different things?
No, I grew up listening to reggae the entire time. But then, you know, once you touch down here in America, it wasn't really until college that I started dropping into hip hop and rap, and Lil Boozy became a thing. You know, it was about
Lil Boozy, huh?
For me, it was Boozy, Trina, and Trick Daddy, because I was, you know.
I love it. Trick loves the kids. Okay, so if you could have dinner with any two people in life, dead or alive, who would they be? Take as much time as you need.
Dang, that's a good question, though. I definitely know off the top, one would be Oprah. That's easy.
Oprah Winfrey.
One would be Oprah. The next person. Oh, I actually, Jesus, Trishana, how you would? It is funny. Oprah and Denzel Washington. Yep.
That's going to be an entertaining dinner conversation.
It'd be a very informative one. I tell you, I step out of that dinner, boy, I would be so equipped.
Absolutely.
Life would have nothing on me then.
You got some fire ones right there. Those are some A1s. Trishana Clark, thank you so much for this talk. I'm going to ask you one more thing. Where can people, if they listen to this, where can they see your work? What's the next thing that you're working on that they can support? And if there's anything they can follow you on, would you please let us
know? Oh, sure. So I have a website, Trishana Clark, Clark with the E at the end, .com. But I'm very heavy on, I try to make my presence a lot more on Instagram. So my Instagram is Trishana Clark as well. You can find me there. Right now, two films that I did, there were actually two shorts. They both of them got picked up to be features. So that's a really amazing thing. And one of them, the first one that's like, oh, so sweet, is called Tender, written and directed by Felicia Pride. She's amazing. She's a powerhouse.
Can you spell Tender? It's not tender as in the...
No.
Okay.
It is T-E-N-D, D as in dog, E-R, Tender.
Listen, you never know these days.
No, not Tinder. And you can find it. It's showing now on Stars. You can find it on demand. In addition to it, it was still showing like on just regular Stars, just showing on the channels. Plus, you can find it on Amazon. You can find it on Hulu. And the other one, Yellow Girl and Me, that one is doing pretty good as well. It was actually shortlisted by BAFTA. And it was up, you know, for under our Oscar nominations. In addition to that, one will be dropped on AMC channel.
Go ahead, go ahead. Triple flames.
Plus, I just got done writing a pilot, so we're looking to eventually get, you know, have that shop, just tightening stuff up on that. And I also am done with a feature.
Yeah. Oh, cool, cool. Yeah, you've been busy, girl.
I'm working on anchoring my series regular on a TV show.
Amen. Amen. Trishana, thank you so much for this
talk. Thank you very much for having me. I really appreciate it. I think it's amazing that you're doing this and, you know, having this platform for people out there like myself, you know, because it's pretty interesting. The life is very different. An immigrant life is very different. It includes, you know, a lot of different struggles that some people not aware of, I should say.
Yeah, don't know. Yeah, don't know.
Not bad. It can work on it a little more, but...
Well, what do you say? Can you say you're done you one time
know.
For me?
You're done no. Oh, there you go. If you want to say you're done no, you're done no.
You're done.
And that was my conversation with the amazing, talented Trishana Clark, the Bob Marley over Gregory Isaacs selector. You don't know. That's one of my favorite things with these conversations is I'm finding out so much about people that I know, but things I don't know about them. And we really got to touch on a lot of in-depth conversation. You can keep up with Trishana Clark at Trishana Clark, C-L-A-R-K-E. On Instagram. You can follow her movie that's streaming right now on Amazon, Stars, and Hulu at Tender, T-E-N-D-E-R movie on Instagram, and you can stream it on all three of those platforms. Until next time, until the next guest, thank you so much for listening. I will have someone fire for you coming up. And give us a 5-star review. Follow us on Instagram at This Immigrant Life Podcast. We're on Twitter, YouTube, and we'll get someone help next for you. Thank you. Au revoir.